time ago. The legend of the hammer and how it began to grow. He was given
Jason,
magical shoes
you.
From a hip-hop Motown dude. Together they had power. They stood up for what was right. But Gramps was getting old and he couldn't keep up the fight.
Right.
So Gramps and his granddaughter, they went
Somebody
out
talk,
on
please.
The road.
No, I like listening. I'd rather
they
not
knew
talk.
Could tell who was worthy of the load.
Boy,
they met a guy named Stanley.
MC
that's too good.
That's too good. But it, and nobody's worthy of that intro like this man, the Scores legal expert, our own Hammer, Eldon Ham, lawyer, author, and raconteur. Hello, Eldon.
Hi, guys. Hammer here. How you doing?
Yep.
Well, you don't get that introduction everywhere, do you?
Actually,
by the
he
way,
does.
You know where that comes from? MC Hammer.
I do.
You know the history of that?
He used to hang around the Oakland A's, like the parking lot there, and it would be
the bat boy.
Yes.
And they thought he looked like a young Hank Aaron, right?
That's right. And they started calling the kid something like that, you know, and it sort of stuck, and he called himself MC Hammer.
Hammer Man! Hammer Man! Hammer!
Stanley Burrell? Is that his name?
Stanley Burrell. So actually, you have heard, you do get the big introduction everywhere you go.
Wow. Now, Eldon, we've been talking about, in the wake of the hiring of Theo Epstein and the new regime here, about what actually needs to be done to relax some of these landmark statutes to allow them to radically reconfigure Wrigley Field, much like what was done at Fenway Park. What does a fan need to know about what could happen?
They do have some latitude as it relates to the interior of the stadium, depending on what they do. The scoreboard is off limits. It's protected. The brick walls, the brick character of the walls is protected. Interestingly, the, quote, open-air character, close quote, of the stadium is protected, meaning don't put a roof over the stupid thing. And so the seats are not protected per se, so you can kind of screw around with the configuration of the seats. Maybe you can squeeze a couple in there, play around with the skyboxes a bit. But, you know, mostly they've done that already. They've done about whatever you can do to pigeonhole something inside that thing. Outside, the elevations are protected, and it gets a little murky, probably inviting a court case as to exactly what that means. But one of the things it likely means is you can't start going up. You can't build onto that stadium, at least by going upwards. And so you're landlocked, and it's an issue. They did actually weirdly, and this is not irrelevant, did expand the stadium indirectly when they cut that deal with all the rooftop owners across the street. It did add a couple of thousand seats. And they get 17% on that, which amounts to, when they sell the ticket, 17 or 20 bucks, perhaps. They don't always sell those tickets over there, though.
But they could put a jumbotron on one of those buildings. If they wanted to buy one of those buildings or rent space there, theoretically, they could do whatever they wanted with other private real estate, right?
Theoretically true. The landmark status would not interfere with it. You would bump into some other issues that just have to do with zoning and the nature of the neighborhood and the building commission in Chicago. You know, you can't just like put up a 200-foot tower just for the hell of it, you know. And when it came around to discuss putting up, I think it was a 40-foot high, 300-foot Toyota sign,
mm-hmm.
That seemed to be okay with the landmark people, but not so good with the building commission because you still have to get a permit to put the darn thing up. But you're right. You build something across the street, theoretically you could do it, and certainly you could do it without an issue with the landmark status.
Well, is there any? So in other words, if I'm hearing you correctly, there's no way to get around the landmark status? That's it? Over with, all said and done?
Or can that be revisited somewhere?
Yeah. Oh, I think you can revisit it, and you can revisit it two ways, at least. One is political and try to get something changed or clarified going through that process. The other is get into court and argue it that way, because a lot of the definitions of these things are fairly vague. For example, the red sign out front that says, you know, home of the Chicago Cubs and all that stuff is protected. But the way it's worded, I'm not sure which part of it is protected. It says the marquee out there. And it might even say actually say marquee sign, but one does not know until maybe it gets in front of a judge Whether that means you just can't tinker with the physical thing, because that's really kind of what a marquee is, like a tarp or something, or a roof that comes out over like a theater, you know, with the lights on it and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's the marquee, a thing. A sign, and I looked it up once because this issue came up one other time, really is a message. So is the physical thing out there protected, or is it the message on the thing? So the issue there was whether you could put, you know, Wrigley Field sponsored by Terry Bores. You mm-hmm. know, Terry Ante's up, and he's going to sponsor the place.
And he is.
And I assume so. and so can you change the message, or does the message go with the marquee, and does that all mean one thing or two separate things? That's just an example. But most of the things that relate to the place, except maybe for the clear ones that say no roof on the place, are really open to some interpretation. And, you know, politically, it may work to the owner's favor if the team is starting to show promise. And nobody sells promise and hope like the Cubs do. And they could go in and maybe get enough public support to relax some of those things. Because when that was enacted, they didn't have a lot going on besides the beauty of Wrigley Field. Now you got a lot of hope. So that might, you know, as it springs eternal, it may help get the process moving.
See, I just wasn't sure how you got to, so I'm glad there's some wiggle room here, at least to get a start a conversation, because, I know the Cubs want the big scoreboard. I know they don't want that one in there. I mean, to put it outside would be one thing, but you still have that monstrosity sitting there. That clearly, if I'm making a break from the past, and I think everybody associated with the Cubs, at least running it now, wouldn't mind doing that. I don't know what Tom Ricketts wants to do. I'm pretty sure what needs to be done there. So that anything there could be negotiated or at least talked about. You can open the topic of, hey, this scoreboard thing here. If we're going to redo this.
Well, who do you talk to, though? You're talking about public support. Let's say that you wanted a horse trade a little bit. Let's say we want to do this. I know Tom Tunney gets involved when it comes to the number of night games. And you have the larger specter of the asking for the amusement tax advance and all that. But what's the actual mechanism of it? Let's say that they have their meeting and they say, you know what? We must replace that scoreboard with a giant electronic scoreboard. What's the first call they have to make?
The very first call is either to the 44th Ward Alderman or it's to the mayor. But ultimately, that's going to be a city council issue. If, in fact, literally they have to pass an ordinance and amend pieces of that law. In other words, if there's not enough wiggle room to get something done sort of within the vague context of how it's written, and you really just have to approach it that way. Not easy no matter what they do because they're so landlocked and they have so few options anyway. But the options that they do have will eventually force the issue, I think.
But what was the reason for the landmark stuff in the first place? What was the motivation for trying to lock in some of these things? Was there were they threatened? Was there an acute worry that something was going to be done? And I'm just trying to compare the collective consciousness
timeline of
the time that it was done with the general feeling about how it is now and whether or not those things jive.
Yeah, it was. I don't think they do jive. I get a sense that things feel differently now. I'm not sure I can put my finger on it, but at the time, there was a lot of public sentiment, if not outcry, that was still fallout from night games and adding to night games.
Mm-hmm.
And all the issues about the drunks in the neighborhood and all those other things. So there was some public animosity that related to Wrigley as it sat there. And so you add to that a certain stagnation in terms of people's willingness to look forward. And it's always easier to hold on to the past than to look forward. So you had all those dynamics, and the politicians saw an advantage in exploiting that a bit and listening to the people in the area. And so eventually they got all these things passed. The one thing that changes the character of the stadium about as much as anything you can ever do already happened, and that was to put lights in the place in the first place. So in a way, it's almost like that old joke about haggling over whether a lady's a prostitute, you know, at $1 million or a buck in the punchline. They've already made the decision they're going to make changes. And the lights are a big one. show is the scoreboard next, the brick character of the walls inside, where do you have wiggle room and where do you run into, I guess, the brick wall? And then you have to do that politically, if not in, in a court, depending.
Are there other stadiums around the country anywhere that have that same kind of stuff going? I mean, I just find this so peculiar that you paint yourself into this corner that, that don't you kind of look at this in a way and say, whatever you did this, that, you know, in 10 years from now or whatever, we're kind of standing in a way of progress here?
Yeah, I mean, eventually it just it becomes a bizarre thing. It's you don't see it as much with the stadiums, although in a way I guess you did see it down on the lakeshore with the Chicago Bears, because that is an example of some kind of compromise, which most people would suggest isn't a real good one. They did end up with the smallest stadium in the NFL, et cetera.
And the ugliest.
And most bizarre. you know, it does look like a spaceship landed on the old Soldier Field and just didn't leave. So you do have examples. They're not in sports as much because usually they end up tearing down the darn place to begin with, and they just start from scratch. And you go all the way back to the Brooklyn Dodgers. They were landlocked. They didn't have any parking. And the owners of the Dodgers said, forget this. We're not only going to move, we're going to go 3,000 miles. And they found a lot of space, and they put up a nice stadium.
Yep.
Well, when the Soldier Field landmark issue came up, wasn't it ex post facto where it was almost ignored that the colonnades were intact and the fact that they were dwarfed and hidden, they were able to get around it. And then afterward, there was a movement to strip it of whatever status because it wasn't considered what it was before.
As best I recall, that did kind of happen that way. And there they just got kind of fixated on a piece of the old Soldier Stadium. Like you said, the columns were such a big deal.
Right.
One of the things in Wrigley, I don't know if you can landmark a plant, but the ivy is one of the features that makes Wrigley Wrigley. And I don't, and they're, it isn't landmarked as we talk. I don't know that you can landmark that. But that's another example of something that could be changed, although that's something that seems to be a nice idea. So I personally, if I were making the decision, I wouldn't change anything with the ivy.
It just seems, in other words, Elder, would let you go. We always appreciate it, that no matter what happens here, are you in for a long fight with this? Because I don't even know if they get the money. Hell, I have no idea if that bond, if you can make that thing fly or not. But at the very least, you're in for a pretty decent court fight here about some of this?
Probably, because in terms of getting the money, if it's public funding, one group is going to object. If it's private funding, that's only going to happen if you have some big sponsorship visibility. And as soon as that starts, then you're going to get the objection there. You probably have the most wiggle room with the latter, though. There probably are some creative ways that you can do that in terms of what you put on that stadium on the outside of it, as long as you don't screw around with the elevation or the marquee and a couple of other things. That whole issue when they were talking about building that enormous Toyota sign, I don't know how that was going to fly in terms of the people across the street either, because they do have a deal in place with those rooftop owners as well, so they have to be mindful of that too.
I just wonder who's going to be fighting the fight for no movement at all on that. That once they start, and once you get enough people and enough business leaders and political force behind a relax the landmark status movement, who are going to be the actual people pushing back against that? It's not the legislation itself. It's going to, because otherwise everybody may sort of all gather around and say, well, yeah, okay, yeah, you're right. I think we should do this. Or is there going to be some strong opposition more than just a loosely knit group of traditionalist Cub fans? Will there be architects? Will it be Blair Kamen? Who's it going to be?
Probably not architects, but some group of purists who are historians who are always in favor of preserving one thing or the other. And they'll make a little noise, but not a whole lot. I think what they have to do is, if they're savvy, is catch a political wave. If there's enough hope that it looks like this team could actually go somewhere, if they could sell more tickets, if they could get more sponsorship, you know, if it's all poised with Epstein and all the rest of it, and it might just be enough momentum to just kind of sweep it through and get it done.
All right, Eldon, it's a good thing you were good today. Otherwise, we're going to come over and occupy your office. So it's a very good thing you were informative today. Otherwise, you know what I mean?
Anytime, but there'll be no guarantee I'll be here.
Thanks, Eldon.
Thanks, Eldon.
All right, guys.
That's our own MC Hammer, Eldon Ham, who provides legal expertise. And he's always very clear. What I like about Eldon, I always come away having a better understanding of what's going on. About 5 minutes later, I tend to forget everything, but at least for that brief period of time when I'm able to retain some of that information, I do enjoy it.